Welcome to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Today on the show, COVID and the classroom. It's a confusing and frustrating time for parents, students, and staff. In many cases, they don't know from one day to the next whether school will be in person, remote, or canceled altogether. Later on the show, we're talking to a panel of district superintendents about navigating the Omicron surge. And the state superintendent for public instruction will be taking your questions. First up, on Friday, about 100 Seattle Public School students gathered in front of district headquarters to demand more transparency from school officials and better COVID safety measures in the classroom.
When our safety is under attack, what do we do? When our safety is under attack, what do we do?
A group of Cleveland High School seniors said they launched the idea of the rally in their ethnic studies class, and other student organizations joined in, including the NAACP Youth Council. I attended the demonstration and talked to one of those students just before she stepped up to the podium.
My name is Naya Spivey, and I am a co-organizer.
And what are we doing here, Naya? What's the importance of showing up in this way at the school district office?
Yes, we really want to show up here to show the district that we really care about our safety, whether they care about it or not, and to show them that as a community of students, educators, families, we really care about this issue, and this is something that's really important because it is about our safety and our safety in school and being able to have access to school. And so having everyone here just shows the district that, like, look at all of these people who really care about this issue.
What school do you go to?
I go to Cleveland. We have been in person the entire school year, and we have had 3 educator-organized sick outs so far, and when those things happen, we only get notice late the night before. So for a lot of people, it's been like, well, do I go to school tomorrow or do I not go to school tomorrow? And it's like a lot of confusion. We aren't really getting the information that we need. The COVID dashboard that's on the SPS website was not updated since December. So when we came back in person the first week and a half we were at school, it wasn't updated. So it's like we want more transparency with that. We are not going to go to school until our demands are met, until we can have a safe environment to get a good education.
And Naya Spivey says the student demands include greater transparency from SPS on COVID cases, expanding mental health resources, especially in light of gun violence and viral school threats, PPE like N95 masks and more testing resources on campus, and a change to the state's 180-day in-person instruction requirement. Rena Mateja Walker-Burr also goes to Cleveland High School, and she addressed district leadership directly during her speech.
We shouldn't have to fight for our education or our lives, but we continue to be pawns in a political game that has nothing to do with us, but has everything to do with the fact that we don't have what we need to learn, be safe, or thrive in schools. We continue to rally and speak and fight because students do not have a seat at the table. And if you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu, and that is not an option. Before we returned to in-person school, we were promised that we would be safe and protected in schools. But the crowded hallways and classrooms, contact tracing, and lack of transparency showed us that it was a promise you could not keep. And with additional gun threats and rise of Omicron and need for KN95s to be implemented in all Seattle public school buildings, your promises and expressions for our safety is not ringing to be true. As students, we stand here today as 24% of the population, but 100% of the future. And all we're asking is to help keep us alive so we can see it. We ask you to listen to our demands and our voices when it comes to our education. And we ask you to see us, hear us, and respect us. Thank you.
Now out in the rally crowd, sophomore Quincy Bash stood on the grass next to the John Stanford Center for Educational Excellence. He and a few friends held a sign that said, "Prioritize student health." So I asked him about that.
What does it mean to you to prioritize student health, and what are you experiencing so far?
Really, I think it means that the district and the people are in charge are making an active decision that is putting our lives, not only our lives, but our families' lives, everyone else's lives, in danger. I think that every day that the district doesn't decide to go onto remote learning, every single person that's in Seattle Public Schools is another chance that they could get COVID, and then if they get COVID, there's another chance that it can mutate into another variant. The district is not putting anyone's safety first, not even just the students.
What school do you go to, and what is the situation there?
I go to Nathan Hale. We are one of the top ranking schools in COVID cases. We're still in person, though. I think that is not only like a failure of public policy, but also an insult to every immunocompromised or disabled person.
What's the effect on your learning when you move between a remote model and an in-person model? Do you feel like you're getting an actual school experience, and do you feel like you're getting enough out of your classes?
For me, I didn't mind online learning, and I understand that a lot of people didn't like it. I think that it's not perfect, obviously, but neither is in-person learning.
The organizers of the protest are talking about options for next week if the district does not meet demands related to moving to a remote model, having a more clear plan about how to deal with these COVID rising case numbers. And the conversation is about whether or not students will continue to walk out, continue to refuse to go to school next week. How do you feel about those options and about the future of this movement?
I feel that we should continue to walk out and not attend school until there is at least a hybrid model. To not even allow people to have a good choice between like protecting their family members and the public, I think that is absurd.
When you go to school and you come back to your home, I imagine that it's scary because you worry about bringing COVID home, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Personally, I'm not worried for myself, but like my grandmother is immunocompromised, so like it's worrying having to go to school and then possibly spread it to her or spread it to my mom. Like my mom is a hairstylist, so she works like right up in people's faces all day, and like if I got COVID at school and then she got it, that's our living compromised.
Is there any other message that you want to send to folks who might not understand why students are here today or to the district?
It's not even just about us, at least for me. It's not just about us. Because I think everyone here realizes that if we get COVID, I will probably be okay. But other people might not. And I think that really that is like the point to get out, is to like have like empathy and compassion for everyone, not just students.
And that's Nathan Hale sophomore Quincy Bash. Quincy told me he did go to school today, but he is ready to support future student-led walkouts. Some district officials attended the student-led demonstration on Friday, right on the steps of Seattle Public Schools offices. School Board President Brandon Hersey stood at the back of the crowd, speaking with Marigold Wong and Natalia McConnell, who are both sophomores at Franklin High School, and they emphasized the increasing need for mental health resources.
Yeah, right now we only have a few therapists. I meet with one, Miss Leanne, and she is constantly filled up with like 50 students that she is trying to meet with and take care of, and we need more students having access to
absolutely
therapists.
Totally agree. Top
because
priority
no
for us.
No one can
as
afford
well.
Private therapists as well.
Nor should you even have to be considering that as an option.
Exactly.
Right? No,
yeah.
We totally agree.
And that brings in the problem with health insurance.
Yes,
and
yeah, for
healthcare
sure.
In this country, which is totally messed up. So schools should not be perpetuating that.
Absolutely.
Because we have 1,300 students at our school, and
absolutely.
There's only one mental health therapist.
I totally agree.
And we hear that you care about these, that these are priority, but we really do need to be seeing something coming from this soon.
Let's work together on this, right? Because I'm not in the classroom. I'm not experiencing the same things that y'all are. So I really want to position y'all to be in the leadership and just telling us what we need to do specifically about these demands so that we can implement.
One overwhelmed therapist for 1,300 students. That's what these students are reporting. Natalia McConnell also talked to District Superintendent Dr. Brent Jones, who observed part of the rally, and Jones declined to speak to the media during the protest. But the district did release a written statement, and it said, in part, "We recognize the fear and anxiety around this dramatic increase in COVID-19 cases in our community. SBS will not compromise the health and safety of students and staff." And the statement also said that Seattle Schools was following the advice of public health experts who recommend remote learning only as a last resort. Quote, "We are listening," the statement said, later adding, "Learning together in person is best for our students and communities." McConnell, the Franklin High School sophomore, was left disappointed by her conversation with Dr. Jones.
He has no plan to implement our demands, and that's shameful. It was performative to come here. He wanted to show to youth that he's listening to it. But the way to show to us that he's listening to us is by implementing our demands for N95 masks for all, for weekly required COVID testing, and for vaccines. And he has shown that he does not plan to do that. So we must continue to put the pressure on him. It is clear that is the only way that we can return to school safely.
And we did invite Seattle Public Schools to join us for the conversation today. They were not able to do so, but we're hoping to continue that another day. And you can hear the emotion in Natalia's voice as she and other students just really share their passion about making change in their schools. If you want to hear more about this protest on Friday, I would recommend a podcast by Nova High School student Sid Walter. And her latest episode of her podcast, Teeny, is called See Us, Hear Us, Respect Us. That's teen-y, and you can find it on most podcast catchers. Coming up on Soundside, some context on the student protests and how Seattle Public Schools has handled the return to in-person instruction from KUOW's education reporter Ann Dornfeld. She joins Soundside after this quick break. And you're listening to Soundside on KUOW. I'm Libby Denkman. Seattle students rallied at school district headquarters on Friday, asking for more transparency around COVID numbers, better masking, and a plan, better masks, that is, and a plan to go hybrid or remote during the Omicron surge. Students like Jacqueline Miller of Garfield High School said the district is not doing enough.
I'm here because when I walk into my school, I don't feel safe, and I think I deserve an education where I feel safe. I see a lot of masks below noses. I see a lot of groups of people, especially during lunch. It's very unregulated, and everyone hangs out really close together eating. And I see stressed teachers, honestly. They all seem very stressed, and I think the classrooms that I'm in, I'm very appreciative because I think my teachers are doing a good job. But I think as a whole, when I go into school, it's just not as safe as I would feel comfortable with.
And KUOW's education reporter Ann Dornfeld is here with me. Hi, Ann. Thanks for being here on Soundside.
Oh, you're welcome, Libby.
So first off, give us some context on what Seattle Schools has been doing since the return to in-person instruction. What measures are they taking?
Well, the district improved its ventilation and filtration last summer, but of course, with the weather as brisk as it is, I've heard that some teachers aren't keeping their windows open as much as earlier in the school year. They do provide staff and students with surgical or cloth masks if they need them, but not those KN95s or N95s recently, and unless staff were working in a very with a very vulnerable population, like in some special education classrooms or working in a nurse's office. Folks can get tested at the school, but there really isn't that same routine surveillance testing like some districts or private schools have. A few schools have been doing outdoor lunches recently, as health officials really strongly advise whenever possible. But even at a lot of schools that were doing them before, both because of the cold and also because of the wind, they've stopped doing that because the wind can kind of turn those tents into sails, and a sail with poles attached to it is not a safe thing.
Yeah,
one thing that really,
we did hear a lot from students also about covered lunch areas outside because they said they want to eat outside, but they haven't necessarily been provided that at all Seattle schools.
Right, right. And that is something that a lot of parents want to see. They say, you know, that's the time when everyone's taking their masks off and chatting in a lot of cases. And that's, you know, the best possible way for kids to get COVID at school right now. So why aren't more lunches outside? Some schools don't really have the kind of terrain that makes an outside lunch easy. But other parents say, hey, I'd rather my kids sit, you know, in a muddy hillside than get COVID. And then other schools, there isn't that same push for it. Depending on the cultural background of the families whose kids attend the school, they may not be as eager for their kids to be outside in the cold and rain and not necessarily have that, you know, no bad weather, just bad gear philosophy, or they might not be able to afford the, you know, the rainy, cold weather gear to keep kids, you know, warmish and dry on a blustery day.
What's the situation now? How many schools are closed and why the closures in Seattle?
There are 7 schools that are currently all remote, and another school that's gone partly remote. And then there's a lot of individual classrooms across the district that are remote right now because of low attendance or some students with COVID in the class. So when schools have gone remote, that's either due to the COVID rate at the school or the quarantine rate, or if there's an unusually large percentage of students staying home to avoid infection, as is the case at some schools. Also today, Garfield High School is fully closed due to the number of staff that called in sick. We saw a lot of that happening at different schools, especially high schools last week, due to staff sick out protests. Staff who say they don't have the staffing or feel like the safety measures are in place to operate the school adequately.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about teacher voices in this, and it sounds like they are speaking out in ways like sick outs, right, Anne?
Right. And you know, that teacher voice is the work of the union, but the sick outs are really been happening kind of not with the full support of the union because it doesn't really align with their contract. But a lot of staff say that the district is not prepared for Omicron, and that's left a lot of short staffing at some schools with so many staff members out sick or quarantining or home with their sick or quarantining kids. There aren't the substitutes to be found to fill all those positions. So that's created this huge workload for the staff who are in the building. And sometimes you've got multiple classes amassing in like a cafeteria or a gym and auditorium trying to hold classes there. So a lot of staff have said that it either doesn't feel safe or that they have to just do, you know, work triple loads, and it's just untenable.
That is a message that I heard from the few educators and staff members who were at the protest on Friday at the Seattle School's headquarters, was they are stretched so thin, and they feel like their regular jobs, their regular students are suffering. I'm talking with Anne Dornfeld, KOW's education reporter, about the protest on Friday and measures at Seattle Public Schools. So we heard the school board president saying that he wants student voices to be front and center and in policymaking. How does that square with how rules are actually made in the district?
Well, you know, it can take a while to change an actual rule, but student outcry has, at times in Seattle schools, preceded the district changing course and making some different immediate decisions. So in this case, the district responded to the KN95 mask demands that students made by announcing that they would start distributing a limited number of those higher quality masks to staff and students this week. Although district official also told me that was already in the works, so it's unclear, you know, to what extent the student demands change that. I think listening, you know, to kids and teens, as we've heard earlier in the show, speak out about these issues can really resonate with the public and with decision makers, because it's so moving to hear young people's stories, you know, many of which are representative of a lot of different walks of life. And of course, anyone who values the civic involvement of the next generation really can't help but want to reward them, you know, at least in some small way for their efforts and make them feel like they've, you know, accomplished something. But as you heard at the rally, there's also a degree of disenchantment that's a kind of predictable and realistic outcome, you know, as part of the process. Part of our, you know, civic process is realizing that the systems don't always work as well as we'd like them to.
Yeah, welcome to civic life. It can be broken in many ways. Well, we did hear one student, Anne, say that there was a problem with the dashboard for COVID cases when students returned from the holidays to in-person instruction. What is the latest with that? Are numbers being reported now?
Yeah, you know, the dashboard was updated on its usual schedule at that time, but the issue was that it is only updated every week, so it wasn't reflecting the big initiative of testing the district had done right over the previous weekend. So it was hard for a lot of families to decide if it felt safe to go back to school, you know, kind of trying to extrapolate what those testing results meant for the safety of their individual building. So the dashboard is being updated weekly on Mondays. So we have a picture after yesterday's update of the case count from last week, which was high, but could have been a lot worse. You know, it means that staff and students who may or may not have been infectious at school in the dashboard, but because the district isn't doing routine surveillance screening as is happening in some districts, the dashboard really isn't a clear picture of the overall positivity rate, so it could be kind of hard to parse, you know, what is the risk of being in a school building. And district officials say they think it's actually very safe. So just because someone has COVID at school does not mean they're transmitting COVID at school. But as the students you spoke to at the district headquarters the other day said, it doesn't feel very good when you see your classmates, you know, wearing their masks around their chin or loosely or not at all during lunch. And you know that COVID is pretty rampant in your building.
Thank you, Anne, very much for joining us and providing this much needed context. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Anne Dornfeld reports on education for KUOW. Coming up on Soundside, we're zooming out to talk about school policy statewide. We'll talk to the superintendents for Vancouver and North Shore school districts, plus Washington's superintendent of public instruction. And this is exciting because we're taking your calls, your questions. If you want to get in line to ask these superintendents or the top school official in Washington State your questions, you can give us a call at 206-543-KUOW. That's 206-543-5869. I'm Libby Denkman, back with more Soundside in just a minute. And you're listening to Soundside. I'm your host, Libby Denkman. We're dedicating today to schools. As Omicron cases surge in Washington, school districts across the state have shifted back to remote learning. Here in Seattle, school is closed at Garfield High School today, Franklin High, Lowell Elementary. They're among eight schools that have shifted to remote learning. Earlier this hour, we heard from Seattle school students and KUOW Seattle education reporter Anne Dornfeld. But how are other districts across Washington navigating transitions to remote learning and or closures? And what can state leadership do to ensure schools can stay open while also protecting the safety of staff and students? Well, we've got some experts to discuss just that. From North Shore Public Schools, Superintendent Dr. Michelle Reed joins me. Hi, Dr. Reed. Thanks for being on Soundside.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And Superintendent Dr. Jeff Snell is also with us from Vancouver Public Schools. Dr. Snell, thanks to you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Washington Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Rakedahl. Mr. Superintendent, glad to have you join the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
So welcome everyone to Soundside, and we're going to take your questions as well. Listeners, give us a call at 206-543-5869 to get on the line. That's 206-543-KUOW. And let's go to North Shore first. Superintendent Michelle Reed, last we heard six of your schools have paused in-person learning going remote. What prompted that decision?
That's correct. We have six schools and our early childhood center as well that have moved remote, and primarily due to staffing shortages. We have a significant number of staff that are out ill, and finding substitutes has been challenging.
Before you closed, were COVID case numbers with students and staff a factor, or was it mostly staff callouts?
It's a complicated factor. It's not linear in terms of reasoning. I would say that yes, case counts also are on a trajectory north, but we continue to try to keep schools open even with the exponentially increasing numbers until we don't have staff available to safely run school.
Jeff Snell with Vancouver Public Schools is with us as well. How does that situation compare to what you're seeing, Superintendent Snell?
Yeah, very similar. Our decision, we have a rotating kind of schedule of some of our secondary schools on remote learning at 4 days at a time. And that was specifically because of our bus driver shortage. We did not have enough bus drivers to transport all of our students. And so we had to pivot. And like Dr. Reed said, there are also staffing challenges and case rates. But specifically, if we have enough bus drivers, we would not be in remote learning right now. But unfortunately, we didn't. So we are cycling through to make sure we can maximize the talented bus drivers that we do have and get kids to and from school safely.
And what does that look like for Vancouver Public Schools? Your rotating closures, does that at least provide some predictability to students and parents? They know that their school is on a schedule to be remote and then in person again?
Exactly. We were managing it kind of crisis management each morning, and we were getting to the point where because of the number of drivers that maybe were calling in sick that morning, it was impacting pickup times, and just felt like that was not responsible, you know, having little ones out waiting for potentially not a bus. So we had last week two middle school and a high school in a 4-day remote learning pattern. And this week we have another set, I think five of our schools on a remote learning pattern, which gives us the capacity to get all the students to and from school.
State Superintendent Chris Rakedahl here as well on Soundside. So as we're hearing, Superintendent Rakedahl, the decisions about whether a school or district will transition to remote learning, that's made at the local level. So we do see a lot of different models across the state. Why not have a state-mandated guideline? Why the local model? And, you know, is that the best way for students and parents to have a predictable way to go to school?
Yeah, you know, at the front end of the pandemic, we had a deadly virus that did not have a vaccine. We had lots of time needed to build all the safety protocols, which have been built out. Our districts are working really hard. By this phase of it, though, there are so many variables that are different from one community to another. We have communities with vaccination rates exceeding 90%. We still have some counties with vaccination rates down in the 30 and 40% range. And then different access to testing, different access to all the PPE. I think the governor and the State Department of Health and myself have concluded this is not a time for big, broad, sweeping policy. You can't even pick now with Omicron sort of a case rate because so many folks are vaccinated. They may be asymptomatic. It isn't as predictive as, say, hospitalizations or, sadly, loss of life. And thankfully, those have decoupled a lot. So as we come out of it, we're going to come out of it with local decisions where cases are really in trouble, or there are bus driver shortages or staff shortages. And in other places, that just isn't the case at all. And they need to be able to make the local decision to stay in their traditional in-person model. So this is the phase we're in. And hopefully, the next couple of weeks, we phase to everyone is in and we stay that way. But right now, it's a local decision.
What can OSBI do to support local districts as they really face this tough decision?
Yeah, you know, we've partnered all year. Our districts have a really impossible task right now because they're not only trying to compel learning and propel it in the way they know how to do well, they're making up and catching up with students who have struggled during the remote learning last year. And as you heard from a couple superintendents, sometimes the biggest issue now is that students are geared up and ready to go and they're wearing their face coverings and doing everything right. But Omicron's breaking through and you've got a lot of staff that are calling in sick. So you can't do much about the spread of the virus right now, unfortunately, except all of us getting vaccinated. That's first and foremost, and our staff have done a great job. Unfortunately, 2/3 of our students are vaccinated at the middle and high school level, and not even a third yet in elementary school. So vaccination is the number one thing we can do, and not compel it, but encourage it, and obviously keep trying to move all the state and federal dollars as we can to districts so they can continue to purchase what they need to, and to come out of this thing ready to work on student learning recovery. So the partnerships are in place. It's just, unfortunately, a big giant Delta wave we're going to have to get through and then prepare, you know, as if there's another one coming. Let's hope there isn't, but prepare as if there is.
We have some calls on the line. If you want to join to ask questions of the North Shore School District Superintendent, Vancouver Public Schools Superintendent, and the Washington Superintendent of Public Instruction, you can give us a call at 206-543-KUOW. That's 206-543-5869. John is on the line calling in from Seattle. And John, I understand you work for Mercer Island School District. So this is going to be more of a general question. Maybe we can get input from all three of our panelists here. John, what's your question?
Well, I work in the Mercer Island. Hi there. I work in the Mercer Island School District. I'm a school bus driver, but I have kids in the Seattle Public School District. And my concern, I was in the classroom for many years, and through COVID, my job was eliminated because of COVID. So I'm now driving a school bus. But what I want to know is why there aren't better options for kids in remote, and why we haven't, you know, statewide, and especially in Seattle, there is not really any kind of a online school that kids can go to that's really facilitated. That, you know, it's pretty asynchronous. Kids are given assignments and expected to teach themselves. And, you know, I've got two very highly capable kids who also have learning disabilities who really don't function in that environment, really need it. And it always comes down to they're choosing not to come to class, when really it's they can't come to class because the kind of class that they're not safe in the school, they don't feel safe in the school, especially in the current environment.
Yeah. And, John, I want to put you on hold for just one sec to get a reaction. It sounds like what John is saying, that he doesn't think that there's enough supervision during online instruction. I know that this is, you know, his kids are going to Seattle Public Schools, but I wanted to get your take, Superintendent Michelle Reed, on online instruction, the kind of supervision that's available, and the struggles that students, especially those with special needs, have in really adapting to this model.
Thank you. I will say that even though we have paused temporarily in-person instruction at four of our comprehensive high schools, two middle schools, and our early childhood center, we are still providing special education services in person on site through the pause. So we are maintaining the programming as much as humanly possible on site. Having said that, the online options, we have a number of families in North Shore that have accessed those, are not, if you will, funded through the state at this time. The requirement from OSPI and superintendent, our state superintendent can speak to this probably, was to require 5 days of in-person school planning for this school year. So it does cost money, and we have had to work within our levy dollars to provide an online option for students and families who don't feel safe yet in-person instruction. Ours is synchronous for all of our K-8 students. So, but that is an effort and a drive we had to make and trying to make a transition, particularly for those families who want to return to in-person once their young children are vaccinated. And we've held multiple vaccine clinics, as our state superintendent said, that's a key prophylactic move to support safety and health at this time. In fact, we just vaccinated another 700 elementary students this past Sunday. So it's been challenging to provide what we would call a personalized program for students, but we feel it's important at this time.
Chris Rakedahl, who is the state superintendent, your comment on what Superintendent Reed brought up about funding for remote instruction. Is there a lack of help from the state in order to provide, you know, the best kind of remote instruction that can be expected?
So our expectations are consistent with civil rights of our students. Our students are entitled to 180 days of instruction, 1,000 hours of learning in elementary, and 1,080 hours in high school. What we've been really clear about, and most districts have figured this out and done quite well, is if you're going to get full funding from the state by law, then you have to have a full program of basic ed. That can be done remotely. We sent out guidance on two occasions in May and again in September, helping districts understand they're going to have remote learning models. It has to be much more intensive in its instructional model than what we saw last year around most of the state. So we have a 70% instructional synchronous learning time. That educator under contract needs to be in front of students a lot more than we saw last year. You can have full remote models, and a lot of districts adopted that. Come to school traditionally in person 5 days a week, or be fully remote. Or there's a third way too, which is called an alternative learning program, where it is very little synchronous instruction. It is self-guided, and that comes with less resources from the state. So we've provided all those menus for districts. A lot of districts did provide a high quality remote learning environment for their teams or for their students. And some just said they couldn't make it work. They didn't have scale, they didn't have facilities, they couldn't ramp it up in time. So you have some districts who offered it and others who didn't. All of them have the choice to. It's just a very different business question of whether you can sustain that. But it does come with full funding if it's really intensive instructionally. Students have access to counselors, nurses, they still get meals. You got to have all the stuff. And I think some districts have said that's tough for us to do in a remote model. And so they didn't offer it. They offered it in person only, and that's understandable. And that's why I think your caller is getting a little different reaction in one district than another. They're each making their own tough choices.
Superintendent Rakedahl, when we talk about staffing and just really intensive, you said 70% of the time, you know, to be fully funded, this remote model has to be instructors in front of students. You know, it's tough, though, when so many teachers are out with COVID and we hear about teachers having to cover other classrooms, being stretched very thin. Is there a reassessment going on at all, or is there an understanding from the state that, you know, we've got an evolving picture here where teachers are doing a lot more even than they were, you know, in the fall and the winter, now coming into, you know, out of the holidays? The Omicron surge has changed the picture.
Well, it really has, and the staffing models are tough. You can talk to local superintendents here who are battling every day to get enough substitutes, get classes covered. Omicron is certainly a different beast. It's going to have a high spike, as we've seen in cases. It's going to have a rapid decline, as we've seen around the world. And we're not reevaluating the intensity of instruction, because that's what kids are owed. That is the law. That's what they're provided for by law. And districts are either getting it figured out locally, or when they have to switch to remote, they're doing a pretty intensive instructional model, because a lot of staff have said, I feel fine, I'm asymptomatic, but I tested positive. So I know I shouldn't be in the building spreading this. I know I need to be out isolated or quarantined for 5 days, but I can go. So they're offering remote instructional models. And what I always remind them is it's also okay, though hard sometimes, to also say, we don't have enough staff and we're not going to go remote because it's not equitable in some places. Kids don't have access to technology, or they live in a place that just quite literally doesn't have broadband, in which case you can cancel school like you would a snow day or a flood disaster, and you can make the days up. But this all starts with the fact that our state has a positive civil right of days and hours for instructional time, and we're not going to come off of that.
I want to bring into the conversation again Vancouver Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Jeff Snell. You've heard this conversation about remote learning, the intensity of instruction, and the funding levels from the state. What are you seeing from the Vancouver perspective?
Similar themes. I think, as Superintendent Rigdahl said, that if a district is able to offer a fully remote option, we saw a lot of families take advantage of that from the get-go coming into this year just because of the uncertainty. So that model continues to evolve, and I'm excited about the work that the staff and students are doing. I think what we're finding right now is in the in-between again. Anytime over the last couple of years when we've seen a spike or a change, you've got families that are dealing with either a quarantine or a sickness, and so they're out while in-person is going on. Or you've got families, you know, I received a number of communications for the weekend about, you know, we should just all pause right now. And so you got all these different perspectives. And so it's that in-between space of trying to provide in-person and remote that can get really complicated. And I feel like despite our staff's best efforts, despite our students' best efforts, you know, we're dealing with a pretty significant situation. And so it's challenging in the moment, and not just in public education, but across all sectors. And so I think really from my position, and it's just rallying staff in the community to let's get each day in the best we can, appreciate that day, and try to buy a little time with these strategies that Dr. Reed and I shared about with a pivot to remote, and keep the school year going.
And just before we turn the page away from this funding conversation, want Dr. Michelle Reed from North Shore School District to have the last word here. Am I understanding you correctly, Dr. Reed? I don't want to mischaracterize, but it sounds like you're saying that you could use more funding for this remote model from the state.
That would be correct.
Anything else you want to add?
No, just that I think that Dr. Snell is correct. It's this time that's in between. That's neither fish nor fowl that's been the most challenging. And I really think that it's been an all hands on deck work for us in every district in the state. I'll leave it there.
That's Superintendent Dr. Michelle Reed. And you heard earlier from Superintendent Dr. Jeff Snell. And also joining us is the Washington Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Rakedahl, and we're taking your questions at 206-543-KUOW. That's 206-543-5869. I'm Libby Denkman. This is Soundside. And we have Janet from Seattle calling in with a question for Superintendent Rakedahl.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. Secretary Rakedahl, did I just hear you say a few minutes ago that we're pretty much accepting that we can't stop the spread of Omicron? And specifically, are you speaking to the school setting, the community setting at large? I do have a follow-up question to that, too. For those of us who don't want to put our children at risk in this setting, and if we're in this limbo and I can't get education for my son, what recourse do I have?
And Janet, I assume you have a child in school in the Seattle area?
Yes, I do. Seattle Public Schools.
Okay, thanks, Janet. And Superintendent Rakedahl, what's your reaction to Janet? I know that this is an emotional issue for everybody involved.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Janet. No, what I'm specifically saying is this is the first variant we've seen at scale that breaks through vaccines. So it has clearly caused an exponential spike in the total number of cases. Thankfully, a decoupling of hospitalizations, so we don't see the same ratio. And loss of life on a per 100,000 basis continues to go down. So the reality is it is very infectious, even as we take all of our safety measures, which is why so many staff are calling it sick. They've done everything right. They've worked hard. They've isolated, they've quarantined, they've gotten their vaccines, they wear their face coverings. We can stop and slow the spread of this pretty significantly when everyone's on the same page. Our schools are some of the safest places. When we are wearing our face coverings and following our protocols, we've had tremendous success. But unfortunately, teenagers go home and don't wear masks, and everyone's going to restaurants and bars and movie theaters and everywhere else, and they are obviously spreading this thing. So we can do a good job. We've done a good job. But the fact is, we went on a 2-week break for the holidays. As you might imagine, most people not wearing face coverings with their family gatherings, totally understandable. We expected and told districts to be prepared for a big surge of cases when we came back. That has been the case. But at this point, we just got to power through that because that course has been set. And fortunately, on the west side of the state, I think the cases are about ready to crest here based on public health officials. And then lastly, again, what we want everyone to do is have options as best they can. And most districts have clearly got an in-person option where they've got safe protocols. Most districts have a remote learning option, and we have these ALE providers, albeit tougher to access. And so people have choices. It's just in the middle of a crisis, those things may not be able to mount very quickly. And clearly districts can't just flip to one of these things easily, which is why you're seeing them make the tough choice when they have to, generally because staff vacancies just don't make it safe to run the school. The districts that have had a remote option have had a little more success, but nothing easy about the moment. And again, if school is canceled, those days will be made up if there's no instruction at all.
Superintendent Rakedahl, we have a caller on the line, Ellen from Shoreline, and Ellen is asking about the CDC quarantine guidelines. Hi, Ellen. Thanks for calling Soundside. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I am a parent of a child in the Shoreline School District. And as you probably are aware, Seattle Schools and Shoreline School District both switched over their quarantine and isolation guidelines last week to follow the CDC guidelines, meaning that now students that test positive can return to school after 5 days as long as their symptoms are, quote, improving. This follows the CDC update. However, Dr. Fauci made it really clear that this update is one of economic mitigation and not of one for infection control. So my specific question and concern is, my understanding is this now excludes children with disabilities, specifically children with complex medical needs, from attending school right now, because this update to these guidelines creates a revolving door of infection.
Superintendent Rakedahl, your reaction to Ellen from Shoreline.
Yeah, unfortunately, Ellen, I don't know the nuance of the CDC guidance. I know our State Department of Health though takes all the CDC guidance and then decides whether they're going to take it in whole or in part, and then every state does that. So not every state follows it. Ours did make a shift from 10 days of isolation and quarantine as the default to 5 days, but there's a ton of nuance to that. It depends a lot on whether you're vaccinated or not. It depends a lot on your symptoms. There are some scenarios where you test back still. You have to test negative to come back. So it's a very complex set of guidance. Generally, though, the gist of your point is made, which is the CDC and our State Department of Health has shrunk that timeline. And my sense is they did that because there are so many asymptomatic folks. In other words, they've been vaccinated, they test positive, but they don't have symptoms. And so keeping them out for 10 days is very devastating. That said, it does have ripple effects. It does have impacts because it does mean that some places may not be able to accommodate as many staff and students as they want. There are also, by the way, I'll just say, districts who have had to make tough closures in the last week or two on a temporary basis, but retaining staff, enough staff in their buildings to support students with disabilities and those who really need a lot more intensive support. So we've seen districts get really creative, even within the CDC guidance, to maximize supports for a lot of learners who need it the most.
Thanks, Superintendent Rakedahl. And I have a question related to quarantining, and this is going to go to North Shore Superintendent Dr. Michelle Reed. And this is a caller who didn't want to be on the air, but is sharing this question for Dr. Reed. They say, I'm in North Shore School District with two young kids. My understanding is that the policy is that after a positive batch test, students are allowed to stay in the classroom for 3 days pending another positive test. Doesn't that mean, this caller asks, that my kids are sitting near positive students? What science supports that method? Dr. Reed, can you react to this caller's question?
Sure. We have batch testing district-wide with an opt-out option, and we're working in concert with the Health Commons and the State Department of Health to set up those parameters. And currently, the guidance is if students are vaccinated, they do stay based on a confirmatory PCR test following the batch test. And at this time, that's the guidance we're working with until the guidance evolves as it has throughout this pandemic. And I apologize for the pinging on the background noise. Every one of those is a notification of a new case that comes across my computer. So,
oh my gosh,
it's been an active day.
Yeah, no, and we appreciate your time and the time of all the officials that have joined us today for this panel. We just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to ask about testing scores because it's linked so closely with this question of in-person versus remote learning, and of course, the impact of the pandemic. The Seattle Times is reporting that between 2019 and 2021, the overall percentage of students who met state standards in math, that fell by 20 percentage points. Just 30% of kids, public students, grades 4 through 11, met standards in math. In English, the portion of kids who met the standard fell by 9 percentage points. That's 2019 to 2021. Superintendent Rakedahl, your take on this news about testing and how it affects decision-making whether to have kids in the classroom during the Omicron surge.
Yeah, thank you. I think the one thing that's really obvious from all this, as we've looked at other states as well, is remote learning does not work as effectively for most kids as in person. They learn from each other. It's real-time engagement with their educators. An almost year of remote learning is not ideal, although necessary in a public health crisis, as we saw. We saw test scores around the country fall in both those subjects. The other thing we've been cautious to tell folks, though, is we were one of only two states that tested this fall for material that was learned last year. So we were, you know, really 6 months to a year of learning something before you assessed on it. Other states chose to assess last spring. They still had drops in most states, and they didn't get very good participation rates. Almost all the remote learners didn't take the tests in other states. So every one of us had a trade-off here. What I would say is getting back to in-person learning and making that the priority has been that of our districts, our local school boards, our superintendents locally. It is the priority because it's the best learning model for nearly all students. And then the last thing I'll say is always be careful of data. My simple hypothetical for you all is if I give you a test and it's a 20-point scale and 15 is what it takes to pass, and a bunch of students 2 years into Omicron go from a 15 to a 14 in their grade level, we suddenly say they're not at standard, even though they got higher scores than they did a year ago or 2 years ago, because they've been learning every year, they just aren't at some standard that we've set. And it might be a very small decrease in their test score, but it put them on the other side of the line. So what we've tried to help folks understand is we do draw this standard line, this proficiency line. It is a bit artificial, and there are definitely more students below it. And obviously, we're focusing on that as learning recovery. But be careful about it, because for most students, their test scores were flat or only down slightly, but it just happens to put them on the other side of a line. And then we say they're not proficient. Well, if I knew 9 out of 10 things, I would still know 9 out of 10 things. I would like to know the 10th thing. It doesn't make me not successful in the other 9, right? And so test scores are a once shot. I'd say be careful of them, but it is informative. It did tell us We had a serious impact across the country from remote learning, which is why we're working hard under the safety protocols to get back to in-person learning.
That's Washington Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Rakedahl. You also heard this hour from Vancouver Public Schools Superintendent, Dr. Jeff Snell, and North Shore School District Superintendent, Dr. Michelle Reed. Thank you very much for all the callers who called in or wrote in with questions for our panel of superintendents and district officials. I so appreciate my panelists today, too, for taking the calls, rolling with all the different issues that we were throwing at them today. You're listening to Soundside. We today were produced by Noelle Gaska, along with Sarah Leibovitz. Alec Cowan and Brandy Fullwood are also producers on the show and assisted with today's program. I'm Libby Denkman. Soundside will be back tomorrow, right here on KUOW.